Rena Marquardt is sponsoring the share this week for her mother's yahrzeit, Elisheva Elka Bat Shneur Zalman Visara.
22.
Wow. Okay, so I hope the shear is worthy of her. And let's begin. Also, Tzvi Edelman, he used to come a lot to the shear, so Tzvi also has yahrzeit, the second yahrzeit for his father, although he actually stressed he's sponsoring tonight's shear. So we figure we'll give him a little extra. Okay. We'll try to give you extra tonight also. So let's begin. Before we start, in Parshat Shemini, of course, we have almost the only exciting narrative. I know we also later have one other, but this is really the exciting narrative, too exciting, of Sefer Vayikra. And what I wanted to just say as far as starting to think about what takes place, very often one of the sins of I'm not sure if it's our disposition or if it's our education, which means I'm not sure if it's learned or if it's just the way that we are. It's probably the way that we are. Probably comes out of a limited perspective. I'll explain exactly. So let me say what it is, and then you know what I'm talking about. We tend to look at things from one perspective. If you want to be fancy, we can call it monochromatic, right? I know that sounds much better. Monochromatic in the sense that we're only looking at things from one perspective, and the reason for that is because we're intellectually lazy, and we see something, and then we understand it as we see it, and then we kind of move on. And in this scene, which is going to unfold, and of course it's going to end up with something which is, again, really quite tragic, and that is going to be the deaths of Nadav Avihu. But as I said, that's a little bit later on. And one of the things which therefore is important, and this we have discussed in the past, is understanding everything which unfolds as Nadav and Avihu saw it, as opposed to the way that perhaps others. I'm going to explain what I mean by this. We have Perek Tet, and then we have Perek Yud. Perek Yud is where Nadav and Avihu take action. Perek Tet is the lead into it. So when Perek Tet takes place, right away, we'll start reading, and then we'll start looking at the various players. Vayhi b'yom ha-shmini kara Moshe la'aron u'levanav u'lezikne Yisrael. See how easy that was? That we have Moshe's way that he's going to see it. We're going to have Aaron's way that he's going to see it. And then we have Aaron's children. Of course, we know that two of them are going to become quite important moving on. And then we have the Ziknei Yisrael. Ziknei Yisrael most likely would be the elders in the sense, either leadership, wisdom, age, chronology. But it's people of significance. So right over here, we have a sentence. And by the way, similar sentences, not exactly, similar sentences were right there when Moshe goes up to Har Sinai to receive the Torah. Pretty similar. Vayomer el Aaron, kachlcha egel ben bakar l'chatat. By the way, right away then we know that there is a necessity to bring a sin offering, which means there may have been a sin along the way. The fact that it's an eagle which is brought, you know, kind of makes this easy. V'ayula ola, tzmimim v'hakrev lefnei Hashem. And that those two words, lefnei Hashem, are going to come up again and again and again along the way over here. And presumably what we're trying to do is to create a relationship with God. We're trying to fix a relationship with God. And this lefnei Hashemiut, this being in front of God, is really going to be the major issue. The El B'nai Yisrael, again, the Zekanim were brought in, but listen to the way this says, El B'nai Yisrael tedaber lemor. So who's supposed to speak? I mean, this isn't God speaking to Moshe. This is Moshe speaking, presumably, to Aaron. Vayomer el Aaron. So he's telling Aaron that he should tell B'nai Yisrael, which now just then something interesting happened. Now Aaron is being placed in charge. Yom HaShmini, there were 7 days before this. The 7 days, we don't have to guess. We can look in last week's Parsha, the 7 days, those are 7 days that were 7 days preparing for this day. During those 7 days, presumably, Moshe, the Gemara discusses this, that Moshe was the Kohen Gadol during those 7 days, because Moshe was in the teaching position at that point, showing how to do all these things which God had told him to do. And now he turns to Aaron and he says, Aaron, now you speak, which is right there, you know, between these two actions, Aaron, you're going to bring this chatat and Ola, and Aaron, you're going to speak to the others. Aaron is in charge at this point, right? Well, Bnei Yisrael tidaber lemor, k'chu sir izim l'chatat, and we've discussed that as well, the significance of the sir izim. We're told from the Midrash that that represents the sale of Yosef, Egel, and so on and so forth. V'shur v'ayol l'shlamim l'zvoach l'fnei Hashem. By the way, almost every korban is offered here, with the exception of ktoret, which may explain somebody's religious sensibility why a ktoret still needs to be brought. Ki hayom Hashem nirah aleichem, because on this day there's going to be a revelation. So that's also quite important. V'ichu et asher tziva Moshe el pnei ol moed v'yikruvu kol ha'eda v'yamdu lefnei Hashem. Now, really the only thing which intrigues me today, this is it, this is the whole thing, is what the word Eda means and who are these people. Because a moment ago, or 2 moments ago, we had Ziknei Yisrael. After that, we had Bnei Yisrael. And now we have Ha'eda. So, what does Eda mean? Who are Eda? Now, I've done not, again, I'm afraid to say every single time, but I pretty much, in the next couple of pages, collected wherever the Eda is. And I was pretty convinced at one point that Eda, again, I don't want to say is always something bad, because, again, there's much more nuance to this. But I did find it at least ironic that I looked it up finally. I have this wonderful biblical dictionary, right? It's a dictionary of biblical terms, biblical usage, which is not the same as Mishnah usage, which is not the same as modern Hebrew, just as things are used in biblical terminology. So he writes Eda, Kfutza, right? A group. But by the way, I was almost willing to call an Eda a gang. Right. See, I wouldn't call it a congregation, because I think a kahal is a congregation. So kvutza, he writes kvutza chavura lematara shlilit. Chavura lematara shlilit, a group of people gathered together for negative purposes. Kigon, right? And then he'll give some of the examples that we're gonna bring up. But then he also writes as a second thing, ulamatara chiyuvit, but there's also sometimes it's used in a positive, and he writes, for example, but by the way, he goes to Tehillim to find those. See, what I did is I limited myself to Chumash, so in Tehillim, he has a number of examples, ba'adat kel in pei bet, ba'adat tzadikim. He also writes that it could be used sometimes, kihilat ba'alat pulchan, mishutaf. Pulchan is some kind of religious service. It's a group together, but for... Okay, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself right now.
A cult?
A cult would be a word that you could use, but again, which is a cult and religion. It depends how... Excuse me? Right. So what does Adat mean in this? See, I also would be tempted... And you know that this is not, you know, my go-to to deal with words and the shorashim. I would be tempted, or at least to suspect, that maybe adat has something to do with testimony, nonetheless. And maybe that what brings them together is some kind of a word, or some kind of an experience, or some kind of an idea, or something which has been communicated by that group. Let me put it this way. I wouldn't necessarily use the word Eda to describe people that don't have a commonality to them. They're not an Eda, which means there's a crowd out there. A crowd is not an Eda, right? So it's also interesting. A kahal could be people that gather together, but it doesn't necessarily mean they gather together for one particular purpose, but maybe it's more geographical or so. Kahal adat would be really two different things. One would be the people that are gathered, but adat may be because there is some, again, other kind of commonality. So again, let's not go too far. I'm just pointing out there's a reason for the positive way, which we'll come to that as well. Okay? My last source here is Rabbi Soloveitchik. So you're always ahead of me. There is reason to use it in a positive way as well, but as I said, let's give me a little bit of time. But so over here, so far, we have Moshe speaking, Aaron, elders, Aaron's sons, offerings. But then, again, in Pasuk, hey, who are these people and why did they come here? Vayikru kol ha'ida. Also, kol ha'ida, did that just now tell us everybody just now came? And again, which more interesting is the word Eda, but it also says, Yikru kol ha'ida v'yamdu lefnei Hashem. So lefnei Hashem comes in again, v'yom Moshe zeh devar asher tziva Hashem tasu v'yira aleichem kavod Hashem. And Moshe says, this is what God commanded, and what's going to happen is that God's glory will come down. So let's now consider a little bit more of the background, going back, going further. Part of the problem of behind all of this, you know, we've said this too many times, not the elephant in the room, it's the golden calf in the room, and that is the golden calf. And that the golden calf essentially is Aaron and the people doing something asher lo tziva, which means it's avodah zara. It's not what God commanded. And again, on a more technical sense, we've also explored this. If God would have said to make a golden kruvim, so then it becomes okay. If God would have said to make golden calf and Aaron and the people made kruvim, then that would have been the sin. Which means the problem over here is doing something which asher lo tziva. That's the problem. Now, the other problem is going to be when Aaron's sons are going to go and do something. Look at source number two. You have Lefnei Hashem and Lefnei Hashem and Lefnei Hashem over here, but you have Esh Zara Asher Lo Tziva Otam, which they were not commanded to. So you're in a situation whereby we're trying to consecrate the Mishkan, and the Mishkan, to a certain extent, may very well be there in order to heal the relationship after the sin of the golden calf. I'm saying it may. I don't want to say that too strongly. It may be there to fix that relationship, or at least otherwise, even if it's not there to fix the relationship, there must be some kind of anxiety or angst. Will this Mishkan actually work? Which means maybe we're undeserving at this point. Maybe because of all that we've gone through. Maybe because, maybe specifically Aaron has some responsibility. Which means the anxiety on Aaron's part, or for that matter, the guilt on his part. And on the other hand, B'nai Yisrael, which means that's why I want to go back to, again, not our monochromatic way of looking at it, to look at it in terms of multiple perspectives. So therefore, what exactly is Aaron going through? What does he want to experience? Again, Aaron wants forgiveness. Aaron wants the whole sin of the golden calf to be erased. Aaron wants to do what Moshe has told him that he needs to do, and that is that he needs to be the Kohen Gadol now, which could be viewed as something which is ironic. On the other hand, Moshe, you know, who doesn't have his hands full of golden calf dust on it, Moshe, on the other hand, he's trying just to, you know, he's really in between the two sides trying to make sure that everything works well, but Moshe keeps on insisting that God is going to appear, and that's going to come up again and again. I mean, we're not finished with that yet. And maybe these people who are gathering as an Eidah, so now your question could be, is this something which is positive, or is this something which is negative, or is it undecided? Which means they're there to bear witness. Okay? And that's why I'm saying, maybe that's the best way to describe what they're doing here. They're here to bear witness, and that's why they're in Eidah. They're here to bear witness, and what are they going to witness? And what's the answer? They don't know. Which means, will everything work, and then by extension, Aaron be forgiven? And let's be honest about something. This does not go as smoothly as perhaps we would have hoped that it goes. It's actually, again, quite tragic and traumatic what actually takes place, and they bear witness to that. And what's going to be the implications of that? On the other hand, Moshe keeps insisting that the glory of God is going to come down and something's going to happen over here, and something does happen, maybe even multiple things happen. So therefore, there is something to bear witness. But now the question will be, what will be that conclusion? And what will be the testimony that they therefore, or how are they going to bound together as this community or kahal? But we, you know what, I don't want to use that word. What's going to be this edah which is going to emerge from this whole thing? So, but I do want to say that I think that there is some aspect of bearing witness, and that's what creates, and that's what this edah is, and that's why they're here, and that's why the term just now shifted. So again, let's keep that in mind and let's move forward. But again, a couple of words to pay attention to. Lufnei Hashem, Hashem nira aleichem, pasuk vav asher tziva Hashem ta'asu. That's going to be very important in terms of what the golden calf was not, and in terms of nadav aviyu as well, which again is going to be somewhat ironic, asher lo tziva, and vayira aleichem kavod Hashem. And that now particular term which is used, kavod Hashem, the glory of God, is going to appear. And what's going to happen then? V'chaper badcha uvada am, Aaron will be achieve his kapara. V'chaper ba'adam kasher tziva Hashem, and the people, the am, will be forgiven. Which means, if we're going to say they're going to be forgiven, which means they require forgiveness. So I'm saying that there is, you know, something very, very strong here in the background as you move through. Towards the end of Pasuk Yud, everything was done kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe. Everything was done in the proper way. Afterwards, Aaron lifts up, he does this tznufa, etshok hayamin hinif Aaron, tznufa lefnei Hashem. That's going to be interesting and ironic. We'll keep that in mind. But the korban is going to be lifted up, kasher tziva Moshe. And finally, in Pasuk Kaf Bet, and this I've gone into in the past, I'm not going to overstate this now. And Aaron completes everything he does, and there is no divine response. And that may actually trouble. There is no divine response at this point. It's only after the next pasuk in Kaf Gimel when it says Vayevo Moshe ve'Aaron. At that point, Moshe joins in El Oamod v'Yitzu v'Yivchua Ta'am v'Yira Kvod Hashem El Am. And at that point, v'Yira. Should be Vayirak Vod Hashem Al Am. Only at that point does the glory of God become manifest. Vateitse Eish Milifnei Hashem, and the people then respond Vayirak Al Am Vayironu Vyaplu Al Pneihem. And all the people, they see this and they break into joy and they fall on their faces. Now, I want you to pay attention to each and every one of those elements. There is this emotion, there is this falling down, there is this praying. It actually seems to be one of ecstasy, I would almost say. Everything worked. The Mishkan works. There is forgiveness. Now, the next day, when this is written up in the newspapers, and you know that the various reporters are there watching and reporting. One reporter, you can choose which newspaper will write, it was a glorious day and everything worked and the glory of God came down and we have complete forgiveness. And someone else is going to write the article and say, well, it didn't actually work the way that, you know, we had thought it could work. And obviously Aaron is not fit to lead because Aaron was unable by himself. It was only Moshe who was able to do it. And therefore Aaron is clearly... He's the extra weight over here, and he needs to be replaced. So I'm going to say it again, that goes back to meaning not just different perspectives, different people watching the same thing or bearing witness to what happened, and they may perhaps bear witness in very different ways because maybe they saw different things or focused on different things. I think if you keep that in mind, then the response, and again, I don't want to spend too much time on this either, then the response of Bnei Aaron, where they go and they do something, Lifnei Hashem, and then they bring the fire, Lifnei Hashem, they may see themselves of having been a complete success because this shows that the Aaron family is able to bring the fire down and is able to do this without the help of Moshe, and therefore specifically without Moshe's word, blessing, involvement, orders, or anything. It is the family of Aaron that is quite holy. So again, we always tend to look at the sons of Aaron as some kind of sinners or failures, and they may not have been the way that they looked at things. And for that matter, when Moshe speaks right afterwards, he may not have looked at it that way either. And let's just keep in mind about that. But let's now pivot and let's move over to a place that you did not necessarily think that we were going to get, and that's going to be source number 3. And I may have missed some uses of Eidah. I may have. But then again, I may not have. So let's go to chapter Shmot, Perek Tetzayin. And the elements over here, which should be paid attention to, are Kvod Hashem, complaints, which we don't see or hear in this place, complaints, Kvod Hashem, but then in Pasuk Kafbet, Eidah is going to be there, but now let's get to context. Here, the reason that people are complaining is, of course, they have a lack of resources. They don't have food, they don't have drink, as far as the way that they're complaining. And we have Moshe and Aaron. Both Moshe and Aaron are involved. El Kol Bnei Israel. Erev, v'yadatam ki Hashem hotzi etchem me'eretz Yitzrayim. In the evening, you're going to know that God did take you out of Egypt, Boker Itim Kvot Hashem, and there's going to be a revelation. So again, be very important. You're going to see something. Now, if you're going to see something, then there's a revelation, I hope you realize that it's almost, again, we would not have thought this way 25 minutes ago. But now, if there's going to be a revelation, and you're going to see something, maybe it automatically then indicates that there will be afterwards a need to bear witness to this. Moshe makes reference to the complaints, all the complaining that they're doing. And that, by the way, that word complaint, it's again and again and again. Okay, I didn't bold that one. V'yihi kedaber Aaron el kol adat. There it is, adat. Bnei Yisrael v'ifnu el midbar v'yihi kvod Hashem nirab anan. Now, that's going to continue in the next section. It's right afterwards, a couple of verses later, same chapter. V'yihi b'yom ha-shishi, laktu lechem lechem mishnah, shnei ha-omer le'echad, v'yivol kol nisei ha-edah v'yigidu l'moshe. Now, in both of these cases, again, kvod Hashem, and therefore edah. Again, something miraculous happens, and this miraculous thing is the man. And again, they're called nisei ha-edah in this context. Shabbat Kodesh Lashem. What's going to happen is that each day they're going to go take bread or man, and on the sixth day there's going to be double, and they're going to come and question regarding, you know, what is this all about, and they're going to be told in Pasuk of Gimel, Hashem Shabbat Shabbaton. No, this is Shabbat. By the way, Shabbat is also an Edut. It's also something which is considered to be a testimony, but then something goes wrong. Some people go out and they go look, which means they draw the wrong conclusion. It goes back to this idea of the Eidah. There's something negative that took place. Here was an opportunity for the whole community to keep Shabbat. They did not keep Shabbat, and in a certain sense, this may be called the first Shabbat. Why? This is the first time that we have this sense. 6 days the month fell, and with double portion on Friday. Do all the cooking on Friday for Shabbat. Shabbat comes, and then Moshe says, oh, no, this is the Shabbat. This is what God referred to. And again, this is before Matan Torah. And then, nonetheless, some people go out. So we'll talk more about them in a moment, which means that certain people continue with, I don't know about the complaints, but they seem to have drawn the wrong kind of testimony. The Gemara in source number 4 tells us, Amar Yehuda Marav, Ilmale Shamu Yisrael Shabbat Rishona Lo Shalta Behem Uma V'Lashon. Meaning, had they kept that Shabbat, everything would have been different. Again, I don't want to go too far into it, but they see it right then as, yeah, something terrible happened. That even that first Shabbat, they could not keep, and there really is something catastrophic about that. And then the next line is where the famous teaching, had they only kept two Shabbat, if they would only keep two Shabbatot, then redemption would take place. Okay, so that was example number 1. Number 2, source number 5. This is where, this is in Perek Kaf Dalet. V'yishkon kvod Hashem al har Sinai. And again, I'm not going to get too much into this. This is merely this idea of the Kvod Hashem, but the Kvod Hashem there should very much be seen as the Kvod Hashem which appears by the Mishkan, but leave it. We don't need to do any more than that. in source number 6, the reason why this is important is that this is Perek Chet in Vayikra, which means this comes right before Perek Tet in Vayikra, which means this is the introductory chapter to the whole story of the consecration of the Mishkan. V'edber Hashem Moshe, Markachat Aaron v'benav ito, v'et ha-begadim v'et Hashem Mishcha, v'et parah chatat, v'et shnei ha-elim, v'et salam ansod, v'et kol ha-eda hakel. So it's interesting, again, this must be to bear witness. But what are they bearing witness to? They're bearing witness to the selection of Aaron. This is when Aaron is being lifted up, in a sense. V'yas Moshe kashetziva oto Hashem, v'tikahel ha-eda, God commanded this, which means this is the next chapter will be the consecration of the Mishkan. This is the consecration of Aaron, and that we need witness. Why do we need witness? Well, you know the answer why we need witness, because there are going to some people who are going to say, well, Aaron's not good enough for this. And at the end, what are we told over here? That all the things, he was invested. Maybe that's the word that they use today, right? This was the investment of Aaron. He was investment. He was chosen. And again, at this point, all the clothing was put upon him. Kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe. Right? As God can. And then this leads into chapter 9, where again the Eidah shows up. So now you realize that Eidah showing up to bear witness, well, they just bore witness to Aaron. But to what extent are they really, or which direction this is going to go, I think may be interesting. In source number 7, which is Perek Yud in Vayikra. So what's Perek Yud? It's the chapter right after Woods, right? And this is immediately after the deaths of Nadav Avihu. Vayomo shel Aaron, ula elazar l'tamar banav, right? These are the remaining children. Roshechem al tifru, begdechem lo tifru, v'lo Tamutu va'al kola eda yiktsof. So it's interesting that the eda is again right here. My point is, in this whole section, selection of Aaron, selection of the Mishkan, consecration of the Mishkan, and then deaths of another Vihu, there seems to be this, I don't know what to call them. There is this, is this the entire people? Some of the people? There are people on the side who are watching. And there's been amazing things. But what's the problem with the amazing things? The problem is, how are you going to report them? How are you going to spin it? What's going to be your conclusion as you move on? It may again be interesting that we find it again by... So far, where did we find it? We find it by the Mun falling, which is a reason to really, that's a revelation. On the other hand, there's some people there who just drew the opposite conclusion, and they break that first Shabbat. We have it with the selection of Aaron, and we have it with Mishkan, and I have another view. And now we're going to have it by another negative event, and this negative event is the Mekalel, the one who curses. By the way, again, it means we essentially skip through lots and lots of places over here by the Mekalel. V'dibar Shem Moshe le'mor, hotzi et ha-Mekalel o'michutz l'machaneh, v'zamchu kol Hashem et yedeihem, al rosho v'ragmu oto kol ha'ida. So again, who's killing the Mekalel, the one who curses the Me'ida? Now, this next turn of phrase may really be interesting, in Ted Zayin, v'nokev Shem Hashem, mot yumat, ragem yugumu bo kol ha'ida. Whatever the word nokev shem Hashem, it makes a hole in the name of God, blasphemes the name of God. But nokev is interesting, right? It really means make a hole, literally. It means make a hole in the name of God. Now, just notice now, in the beginning of Bamidbar, Eile Kruei Ha'eda. Kruei Ha'eda are the people from the Eda who are called, who are summoned. So again, you could have used other words here, but it's really interesting. So that's such an interesting turn of phrase compared to v'nokem shem Hashem nikvu b'shemot. The ones who are called by name, and so on. Over here, these are the people called. These are the people who are going to be around the tent. These are the people who... I could have used the word just nisiim. I could have used the word zikenim. So it's interesting to me, nonetheless, Eda is used, Kreha Eda, but there may be another negative reason for this. And that, of course, and this should have been, there's two things that should have been anticipated from the beginning. Maybe this one, it depends how you think. Or just to make you feel better, both of them should have been anticipated. Source number 10 is really what you should have thought about right from the start. Because when I said that there are people who are going to draw the wrong conclusion, maybe there are going to be people who are going to say, well, maybe Aaron is not necessarily worthy. Maybe this is something that reason for him to be replaced. So you know who that's going to be, and that's going to be Korach. So for us to get to source number 10 and get to Korach, that should not be a surprise. V'yikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron, v'yumor lechem rav lechem kol ha'ida kulam kedoshim. That is now going to again be an interesting turn of phrase. Kol ha'ida. And who are they referring to? Are they referring to the entire people? Then why use the word Eda again? Why not use the word Kol B'nei Yisrael? Why not use the word Kulam? Everybody is holy. Why Kol Eda over here? Kulam Kedoshim B'toch Hashem. Madua Tinasu Akal Hashem. Vayishma Moshe Vayipol Al Panav. Which is also interesting because that theme of falling down was something which we had seen before. And, of course, which means the appearance of the Ketoret over here, where Moshe says, okay, you know, we want to see who really is worthy. So how exactly do you nuance all of this? One easy way to do it is to say that in Perek Tet, Aaron is Kohen Gadol. In Perek Yud, his sons mess up. How do they mess up? They take an Eish Zarah, and then Moshe, and I would almost use the word cynically, right? I don't want to use that word with Moshe Rabbeinu. I really don't want to use that word. But Moshe almost cynically says, "Oh, you want to be a fake Kohen? Sure. Why don't you try to take the Ketoret and some fire? Let's see how that works out." Didn't work out that well before. And I do want to say something about this parenthetically. The religious meaning. I could read the sin. I don't want to use that word. I can read the action of Nadav and Avihu. And then use it in a Bamidbar kind of context. It's not a Bamidbar story. It's a Vayikra story. The problem is it's a Vayikra story that sounds very much like a Bamidbar story. So therefore, and I've said this before, had this been in Bamidbar, where should it be? It should be in Parshat Naso. Parshat Naso is the same day. Parshat Naso is when they bring the sacrifices. It is the day that, you know, Nachshon and so on, the 12 tribes bring the Nesiim, bring the offerings. It is the same day. Let's just say presumably yes, but I don't know the exact sequence. But it is the same day, so had the story been told on that day, it would have been fine. You know, one of the things we've told you, that Aaron then blesses the people. So presumably he said Berachat Kohanim. Where is Berachat Kohanim? It's in Parsha Naso. Which means, had this been in Naso, had this been a Bamidbar story, and we keep all of Vayikra boring the way it's supposed to be, you know, that would be fine. Nobody would say, oh, you know, why don't you put that story here? So if we read this through the Bamidbar perspective, so then you take, you know, you go over here and it becomes interesting, almost, I'll say it again, almost a cynical response on Moshe's part. But let's just pause for a second. What happens if I read it as Vayikra story? And the Vayikra story is, if you go through all the offerings that were brought that day on Yom HaShemini, they bear a very similar or very strange similarity to Parshat Acharei Mot, which is Yom Kippur, except for one thing which is missing. And what's missing? What's missing is when the Kohen Gadol takes the Ketoret and goes Lefnai V'Lefnim. By the way, there is some debate where exactly Nadav and Avihu did this. Did they go Lefnai V'Lefnim? Did they do this inside or did they do this outside? As I said, there is some debate in the Gemara and Rishonim exactly what really happened over here. But if, let's just say, that it was brought inside, so then what you have over here is religiously, or they were correct. I mean, their intuition is correct. By the way, the other big question on all of this, which I haven't seen anybody question, were they working in tandem or did each of them independently come to the exact same conclusion? I know that you would have always have said that they've worked together. I would just love there to be any evidence that they worked together. Then perhaps each one had this intuition and their intuition is correct. I'm going to say it again. That's what's interesting, is that later on when we get to Yom Kippurim is the day to get forgiveness for the golden calf. Think about that for a second. And then God says, oh yeah, by the way, you know, on this day take the Ketoret. You know, on a theological perspective, we've mentioned the teaching of the Bnei Yisachar, is Bnei Yisachar, yes, where he says that in the Garden of Eden, all of the senses were corrupted except for the sense of smell. So therefore, to specifically use the sense of smell, the ketoret, in order to go in and try to get forgiveness is interesting. The other thing which is really interesting is the debate that takes place regarding the wine. Immediately afterwards, Aaron is told, right, what God says to Aaron, that not to drink and be intoxicated when serving. So therefore, there are some who will say, oh, therefore they must have been drunk. And there are others who say, like the Chizkuni, for example, says, no, nothing to do with drunk, that normally you give avelim, you give them wine, and that says, and the Gemara says that's why God created wine. There's also a verse in Mishle which says this. It says, give to the person who's bitter and so on, you give them wine to drink, you give them beer, you give them wine, and so on. So therefore, the giving the wine could have been, or the mentioning of the wine could have been that normal mourners can drink wine. By the way, there is a machloket. The halach is that mourners can drink wine. There are some Sephardim, especially Moroccans, who don't drink wine during Shiva. Right? I'm saying halachically it's allowed. And not only is it allowed, the Gemara says that's why God created grapes, was in order to help mourners to deal with their pain. But it's interesting because on top of all of that, because Chizkuni says, no, you can't mourn. You're on duty. You're the Kohen. No one else. You're working. There's no one else. You're on duty. You can't take off. And therefore, that's a stress. No, you can't drink wine. But the Kabbalists, going from the Zohar onwards through the Leshem, they say is that they were trying to do a tikkun. On this day, they're forgiven for, theoretically, for the golden calf. They bring the goat, Mechirat Yosef. So there's one more sin hovering back from, you know, the earliest days of history, and that's eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which the Zohar says is grapes. So therefore, they're taking grapes, they're trying to do a tikkun, and that would be interesting, because then you take the thing where the sin took place, again, the Zohar, it's grapes, you take the grapes, the wine, on the one hand, but then you take the ketoret, the place where there was never sin, the incense, and then you're armed with sin and with the antidote, and you go together into the Holy of Holies. I'm just saying is that spiritually, what's taking place is a bit more interesting than I think that sometimes, right, than we think about. But nonetheless, if I do a Vayikra approach, then I analyze what they're doing, and that's pretty good what they're doing, because God's going to, again, that's the big difference. God's going to command it, but it's even more interesting that he commands it after all of this, that he commands the incense, the ketoret afters. On the other hand, if I go to Bamidbar, then that's why I'm back to Moshe saying, oh, you want to be Kohen Gadol? You want it? Great. Why don't you take the incense? Let's see how that works out. And the bigger surprise is that they go ahead and they do it. What do you mean? They don't know how this is going to work out? It's not going to work out well. So we are in the Korach story now. And again, some of the elements are there. You have the Eidan, you have the Ketoret, Vayipol al Panav, and again in the Pasuk of Aleph, Yibdu mitocha Eidah, Vayidber Hashem o Moshe v'l Aaron Leimor, Yibdu mitocha Eidah hazot. So however they may have used Eidah initially, Eidah at this point now probably means 250 or so people. So that's also very interesting just in terms of the number. V'achaleh otam kiregav, Yiplu al Pneihim, which means, again, the falling on the face, which was there out of ecstasy in our story where we started, but again, here, this becomes one of prayer. Next chapter, now why is that interesting? Because this takes us back to where we were with the man, with all the complaints. Kol adat b'nei Yisrael mimacharat, al Moshe v'al Aaron le'mar, atem hamitim et am Hashem. They're saying it in a cynical way. You killed everybody. But don't you realize all these elements are again? The Idah is there whenever there's something to be witnessed. What they're going to interpret is going to depend on them. But again, the wicked Eidah is already dead. That's what they're upset about. The 250 are gone, and now there's a new Eidah, which comes immediately afterwards. And they now have a revelation. El Pnei Olamoid, Harimu Mitocha Eidah Zod, V'chaleh Otam Karegav, Yiblo Pneim, and then they pray. And again, what takes place now in order to stop the plague, the ketoret comes in as a healing ketoret. So my point is, did I necessarily explain and nuance every single point over here? No. But what are you realizing that Eidah is the key issue, and with broad strokes you realize that there is connections between these various elements. Now Chazal noticed them as well, and you know this midrash, I just have to remind you of it. What is it? It says that then two people broke the Shabbat. So if you look at source number 12, Vayatir anashim imenu, eile mechusrei emunah shayubahem. These are the people that did not have faith. Umihem, and who were they? Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, eilu datan vaviran. Ne'emar kan anashim, v'ne'emar lahalan anashim, shenemar surna me'al o'aleha anashim. Manashim shenu lahalan datan vaviran, in the story of Korach, va'af anashim nemurkan datan vaviran, which means this midrash is focusing on one word, but it's not just the one word. There were really a whole cluster of words that linked between these two sections, and therefore when I said, oh, let's take a look over there because you have the Eidah, you quote Hashem, the revelation, and bearing witness, so again the question is going to be, when you bear witness, what's going to be your conclusion? What's going to be your testimony? Which means just because God shows you a revelation doesn't mean that you're going to come out of it with the complete faith that one is supposed to. Maybe you come out of it what you go into it with. Maybe that's also a part of it. Maybe two people can see the exact same thing and one person's strong in their belief and therefore becomes confirmation and it strengthens their belief, and somebody else who has a lack of belief, then they are able to continue with their cognitive dissonance and be able to interpret whatever it is that they saw in a way which they feel more comfortable with. But it also is very interesting. The Midrash notes it, but that really linked between the two places that we wanted to go. Yes. Yes, I said that from the beginning. From the beginning. Yes. In source number 13... when the tribe of Levi is being chosen. So it's interesting, again, the word Eidah is used in this. And so on. Which means, again, we have that word being used, bearing witness, or the Eidah, in this sense, with the selection of Levi and the selection of Aaron. So again, this should be no surprise, but that seems to be one of these major usages. And again, the Korach and his people are rejecting that, and they're bearing witness to something which is different. And I'm saying, again, this could go back to two different ways of reading it. In source 14 as well, Perek Yud, we're in Bamidbar now. This is take the Chatzot's throat, and it says, V'yuluch l'mekrei ha'idah, right, and again, v'nadu elecha kol ha'idah petach ol moed, and uvnei Aaron ha'kohanim nitzku b'chatzot zrot, which means it's never too far. It's Levi, it's Kohen, it's Aaron, it's always there when the Eidah is being introduced, Mishkan, and again, it's always bearing witness, but there seems to be this really interesting commonality. And I told you, I pointed out what the problem was, that no, there was no divine response. There was no fire. There was nothing happened till Moshe came out as well. Right. Source 15, we're getting to the other one that you should have guessed at from the beginning. V'yelchu v'yavu Moshe v'el Aaron v'el kol adat b'nei Yisrael amid b'paran k'dei sh'v'shuv otam davar v'el kol ha'edah v'yirum et pri ha'aretz. So adat b'nei Yisrael and kol ha'edah, this of course is the beginning of, or towards the beginning of the spy story of the Meraglim. In the next chapter, that's Yud Gimel and Yud Dalid, Vatisa kol ha'edah v'itnu et kolam v'yivku ha'am b'layla zeh. Again, they brought back the fruit, they brought back the report. So now, again, if you can call them Eidah for whatever reason you want. They drew the wrong conclusion, and they all start to cry. And now you have complaints again. V'yalinu al Moshe. So I'm saying that these elements keep coming again. V'yalinu al Moshe v'al Aaron. Right, v'yomaleim kol ha'edah, how he only died, and then once again, v'yipol Moshe v'Aaron al paneihem, which means these elements come again and again, and v'yomaleim kol ha'edah, they want to go kvod Hashem nira ba'ol moed, and then the glory of God appears. So again, how many of these clusters do you need till you realize that they just, these things, these elements keep coming together, and all of them are right there? Those that are worried that I've wandered too far astray from Shmini. No, they were all there in Shmini, and that's why I wanted to point out that this cluster appears again and again in different places. And I think it does mean to bear witness, but now the question is, what is going to be your conclusion? But we also are seeing that, you know, arguably in some of the worst events, you know, including the Meraglim, where we have the rebellion of Korach, we have this idea which is being introduced, this idea of Edah, yeah. It's bearing witness and
bearing witness to these events, yeah, that are happening now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're happening, we're reading about.
Correct. Okay. Perek Tedvav.
It's just an ornament.
What exactly, you know, where it comes from, what's the origin, I think is interesting. But over here, it seems to be in all the cases that we're noticing it, that there is something to bear witness to. In Perek Tedvav, is interesting because, again, we're in Bamidbar Tedvav. Where does Tedvav come after Yudalad? Where does Yudalad come after Yud Gimel? Which means this is immediately after the chait of the Meraglim. V'haya im me'enei ha'eda nasteh shkagah. What happens if people who are the leaders of the community, that's what you'd want to say, but what if the people are bearing false witness? That's really what it is. Kol ha'eda, right? And they call it v'shkagah v'asu kol ha'eda par ben bakar echad la'ola u'sirizim echad la'chatat. Which means this is talking about forgiveness when there is really misjudgment. I'm just saying is that this just became a little bit stronger in moving a little bit further in Bamidbar, which is still the same chapter. A couple verses later, now you have somebody who is the Mekoshe Sheitzim. And he breaks Shabbat, which is by the, really where we started all of this. And what does it say? Predictably, that veikruotom motzimoto mikoshesh etzim moshev al aron vel kol ha'ida, and then afterwards ragumoto bavanim kol ha'ida michutz l'machaneh, but you tell them kol ha'ida michutz l'machaneh. And now the question again: there's something ominous over here, but you can decide. These are the people who are on the side of Shabbat. These are the people on the side of Moshe. But again, it's interesting that wherever this ida is being used, there's always something that you need to pay attention. When Aaron dies, yes. Which you realize there's some kind of poetic justice over here, even though it's quite disturbing. When Aaron dies, it says, Yosef Aaron Elamav, ki lo yavo el haaretz, right? Aaron is not going to enter into the land. Vayas Moshe, kasher tziva Hashem, vayaluat et hor ha'hor, le'enei kol ha'ida. So again, le'enei kol ha'ida is so perfect, but Aaron's death now, there is also going to be this, as it were, this bear witness that Aaron is going to die. Not surprisingly, when Moshe is told also that he, you know, the end will soon come, in source 20, Perek Kav Zayin, V'dibar Moshe El Hashem Lemor, right, the opposite of what you expect, by V'dibar Moshe El Hashem Lemor, Moshe talked to God, Yifkod Hashem Elokei Ruchot L'kol Basar Ish Ala Eda. By the way, Hashem Elokei Haruchot, where was that used before? And we saw it. It was when they pray for the rest of the Eidah after the sin of Korach. All the people started complaining, are you killing all of the Eidah? And then Moshe uses the same phrase in source number 10. Pasuk Kafbed, source 10, Perek Tetzayin, V'yaplu apneim v'yomu kel elokei ruchot l'kol basar ishachetcha v'al kol ha'eidah tiktzof. Right? And when God says, move away from this Eidah, and I'm going to kill all of them. So it's interesting again that over here, Ish ala Eidah, Asher yotzei lefneim, v'asher yavo lefneim, v'asher yotzei otam v'yivim, v'lo tia adat Hashem, katzon, and so, that one. So it's again, it's interesting that the Eidah is all over this section as well. So it's there when Moshe is going to be replaced. It's there when Aaron is replaced. So again, this is really interesting, going back to where we started today in Shmini, because maybe there are people who think that maybe, you know, something bad happens. I'm not talking politics now. Maybe something bad happens, replace the whole leadership, just get rid of everybody, and there are people who want to do that. But maybe Moshe, maybe Aaron, maybe both of them, and that's what Korach then articulates. So I'm saying it is very interesting, because the creation of the Mishkan really should have been a time of healing, and therefore this Yom HaShmini should have been a time of healing. Now, there's, oh, I didn't put a number on it. Now, there should be something that in the back of your minds, at least some of you should be troubled with. And that is source number 20, it doesn't have a source, between 20 and 21, hovering there somewhat. It's the Gemara in Megillah. It's a couple places, but we chose this one. It says that Amr B'chia Bar Abba, Amr B'Yochanan, Amr Krabin et Chetash Mitoch B'nei Yisrael. Right? It starts off, sorry, I skipped the first words. Menon and Mile. How do we know that a minion is 10 people? 10 men, sorry. I'll get yelled at by some. How do you know that a minyan requires there to be 10 people at least? My mashma detani rebchia atya toch toch tiv hacha vinit kadashli betoch bnei Yisrael v'ktiv hatam hivdu mitoch ha'eda v'atya eda eda d'ktiv hatam ad matay la'eda harahazot malhalan asara Afkan Asara. Now, this should be so disturbing because along the way over here, we all know that Eda is negative. And it just now, we noticed that the word Toch Eda, you can learn Eda from Eda. You know, the bad Eda we were talking about over here, there were bad Eda. What does that have to do with the minion? Afterwards, the Eda Harad, another bad Eda, which means essentially, oh, Korach's crowd, or we have the Meraglim. Why in the world are we learning out the concept of minyan from Eidah? So I want to go back again and talk about the very basic function of what an Eidah is. Once again, from going back to the beginning, an Eidah seems to be a group of people who bear witness. And when you bear witness, you can bear witness in multiple ways. You can bear witness and be positive and bear witness and be negative. So which way are you bearing witness? Which means you can see something and what exactly to do with it. There's really a remarkable teaching in the Beit Yosef in Source 21. Now, this is Siman Nun He. Just in case you ever try to figure out, now I wonder where he talks about this. Siman Nun He is the law, right? It's the morning, it's Aruch Chaim, it's the beginning of Aruch Chaim, it's where it's talking about davening. Nun He is where it talks about Dine Kaddish. So by Dine, maybe it's a good thing to talk about Eloi Neshama. So Dine Kaddish, one of the things it brings up is a minion. And how do you create a minion? What creates a minion? So over here, the Beit Yosef, commenting on the tour, he, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and he says, Umikan lamad mori harav hagadu Rav Yaakov bei Rav. So in case you never heard the name before, underrated, we don't know that much. But this is Rav Yosef Karo's Rebbe. This is the one who he calls my Rebbe, Rav Yaakov Beirav, who says, She'im haya echad yashan, mitztarei from tisha l'kadish l'kdusha. Just pause there for a second. You have 10 people in a room, and one of them sleeping. Can you count somebody sleeping for a minion? So he says, yeah. Why? De'ika asarad b'nei kdusha ninhu, shapesha yishchinata alayhu. The 10 people together, the shchin is there. Which it seems to be that 10 people together, which, by the way, what's the minimum where the term Ada was used? That really was the question. The minimum time going all the way through all these cases, the minimal time that we saw Ada being used was by the 10 Meraglim. And therefore, what's the minimum that you can have for a minion? Meaning, had I not gotten there, I maybe would have been forced to say, oh, the minimum Ada is 250, right? Right, and was close to that, yeah. He does. All that's true, but I'm going to say it again. The Gemara, when it wants to learn how you understand that the minimum of 10 people creates a minion, the Gemara learns it out from what would sound to be unfortunate places, because it's looking at some negative groups that were there. But I'll say it again. 10 people together, the Shekhinah is there with them. But now the question is, which way is their testimony going to go? But so much so that Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav even said, and I want to read a little bit further. He then continues, Rabbi Yosef Karo, V'achokach matzati shekatav ha'igor b'simin reish nun bet, b'zeh l'shono, nish'al gadol hador, Mari Mulin, that's the Maharil, the Gadol Hador, the Maharil was the Gadol Hador, one of the most important books in terms of Ashkenazi custom. Al Asara Shayu Bebeda Knesset, V'yashan Echad Mehem, Im Yochulim Lit Palel, Afal Pishu Yashan, V'yashiv, HaRabbeinu Tam Tziref Im Tinok Hamoltob Arisa. By the way, this is the rumor that maybe some of you have heard, maybe not, that Rabbeinu Tam even used a baby forget about somebody 13 years old, even used a baby in a crib. He says, but nonetheless, just in case you think this is a new phenomenon, he says that we use people for a minyan, even if some of them are standing in the back and having a different conversation going on, you can still, there's still a minyan in the room. That he's saying that 10 people create this thing where the Shekhinah comes down, and now, but by the way, that is so perfect. Because what are we talking about from the very beginning? We're talking about the Shekhinah coming down. We're talking about the word Eid and the Shekhinah coming down. So it's okay, what's the minimum amount that the Shekhinah comes down? Minimum amount is 10 people. 10 people are together, Shekhinah comes down. Shekhinah comes down, now how are you going to bear witness? What are you going to do? So it says, okay, but one of them sleeping, doesn't make a difference. Some of them are talking, it doesn't make a difference. I'll tell you something which maybe some of you heard me quote, and then we'll finish this. That Senator Lieberman passed away last week. So, and those of you who don't know that I was chosen to work with him on a book that he published, and along the way we essentially had a chavruta and we learned together. We went through all the material, and I'd heard a story, so I asked him about it, and he confirmed it. The story was that. Goes back to Minyan, that when he was a candidate for vice president and he ended up losing, that was the recount in Florida. If you remember, Bush's brother was governor and he had some other family members do the counting. So if you remember exactly what happened, but as the whole appeals process was taking place, he still had his secret security people who were accompanying him, and he would walk to shul, him and his wife, Hadassah, they would walk to shul. And then he had people that sat with him and people that the Secret Service who sat with him and some would sit with her. And when the election was finally over and the whole appeal system was process was over, everything had come to an end. Their security detail was supposed to end on a 10 o'clock in the morning, on a Shabbat morning. So they walked into shul. They get to shul at 10 o'clock. Senator Lieberman gets up and walks over to the head of the team and says, I just want to thank you for your service and thank you for your dedication and so on, and you guys are now relieved. And he responded and says, no, well, we talked it over. We'll stay. We'll stay. We'll stay. Now, by the way, it didn't mean that you can count them for the minyan necessarily, which is really where all this comes in. And he goes, you'll stay. So the rabbi had told me the story initially, and he said that when he heard that, he thought, oh, they want to hear the sermon. Not at all. He goes, yeah. So Senator Lehman says, you're going to stay? He said, yeah, we'll wait for the Kiddush. And then he added, and then he added the chop liver. The chop liver. So I asked him about the story. He said, yeah, that's exactly, again, he told us me. He goes, that's what happened. We want to stay for the Kiddush. We're staying for the Kiddush. So let's just finish up. There's some people in Minyan who are talking and some people that are sleeping. And just in case, you feel a little awkward, and some people just there for the chopped liver. So just in case you feel a little awkward about this, he continues and he says, Ukidai humori zichrono levracha l'smochalav. And my teacher has broad enough shoulders, you can rely on him. So, Rav Yosef Karo, again, Rav Yosef Karo, he's saying, you can rely on my teacher. If my teacher said it's okay to count somebody who's sleeping, you can count somebody who's sleeping. But of course you can count somebody who's sleeping. We learn the whole thing out from people that are wicked. But again, the Shekhinah comes down. That's the question in this world. When the Shekhinah comes down, we then become an Eidah. When we're an Eidah, we bear witness. And now the question is, what are you bearing witness to? How do you bear witness? What did you see? What did you think you see? What is it that you're going to report? How are you going to spin it? Do you see something positive? Do you see something negative? And all along over here, we kept seeing that the word together with something else that takes place. And now, again, the question is, what is it that you do with it? If we do something positive with it, then obviously, davar shebekdusha. What Rav Soloveitchik will point out in the last source over here, which we won't read inside, is that this is also, we learn the laws of Kiddush Hashem. Laws of Kiddush Hashem, that certain things that one needs to even sacrifice their life. If there is 10 Jews over there, this is the idea also of Kiddush Hashem. Comes from the same idea, is that it's bearing witness. There is witness being borne when there are people over there. And now the question is, when we are in situations, how is it that we look at things? Do we see the positive? Do we always see the negative? Do we see the Giloy Shechina? Do we see that God's hand is over there? Or do we see some way to twist it and turn it and draw a conclusion? Well, maybe we need to replace Moshe. Maybe we need to replace Aaron. Maybe we need to replace everybody, which means what is it that you're bearing witness to? That then actually becomes the question. And now you realize that what takes place over here in Shemini, actually, perhaps it's a linchpin, but there are issues before and issues afterwards, but all connected to this episode.